Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change and how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community. This program is an extension and production of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX. It's made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. There is an expression that the eyes are the window to your soul. But what many people don't know is the mouth is the window to the health of the body, or that problems in your mouth can affect the rest of your body. Yet a report by the American Dental Association found that more than 100 million Americans fail to see a dentist each year. And many parents still believe that tooth decay is a normal part of growing up, with tooth decay one of the most common chronic conditions of childhood in the U.S. The CDC reports about 1 in 5 children, 5 to 11 years of age, have at least one untreated cavity, and yet they are nearly 100% preventable. February is Children's Dental Health Month, and my guests today are perfect fit for that topic. Joining me in studio today are Dr. Theron Stout, board-certified pediatric dentist, Stout Pediatric Dentistry, and Tolosa Children's at Tolosa Children's Dental Center. And Tracy Anselmo, Executive Director, Partnership for Children of San Luis Obispo County. Today's show is live, and we invite you to join our conversation with your comments and questions, and you can do that by calling us at 781-3875. Again, that's 781-3875. And welcome to both of you today.
Thank you so much for having us. We're very excited to be here.
It's Thank a pleasure. You. Now, I actually find this a really interesting topic because I hate to tell you this, but I'm not a big
fan.
Dental fan. Right. I know dentist fan. I do go, but I'm not a big fan. In fact, I'm a big baby about it. So, Let's first find out what the organization is.
Certainly. Partnership for the Children of San Luis Obispo County actually supports exclusively Tolosa Children's Dental Center. We have two locations, one in Paso Robles at 717 Walnut Drive, and also one day a week we're here in the city of San Luis Obispo at 3071 South Higuera. And we actually provide a full range of dental services for children, mostly who are underserved. In other words, they're low income, they may not have insurance at all, they are on public insurance, and those services include cleanings and x-rays and examinations, but it can go as far as taking them to a hospital for treatment under general anesthesia. And I'm sure Dr. Stout will talk a little bit more, being one of our providers in addition to having his own private practice up in Atascadero. We'll talk a little bit more about what those services entail. We've been around, actually, as Partnership for the Children for over 15 years, and Tolosa Children's Dental Center opened in 2003 with our location in Paso Robles.
Now, when you talk about the insurances that are accepted there, or the people that you're serving through the center, these are people that are on Medi-Cal?
They are people that are on Medi-Cal primarily. Over 90%, probably closer to 99% of our patients are on Medi-Cal. The dental insurance program of that program is Dentical. Clever, isn't it? And then we do have some that are completely uninsured, and then we also have families that are underinsured, so they may have a policy, but they aren't able to really utilize it, so we assist them in paying for that care as well.
And in addition to Dr. Stout, how many providers do you have?
Okay, let's see. Now I'm going to have to count on my fingers. We have 3 pediatric specialists. Okay. One works full-time and 2 work part-time, so one day a week each. We have a full-time general dentist, which is what most adults are familiar with. And then we also have a part-time general dentist, so that's 5 providers. We also have a lot of support staff that help them be able to provide those services. We have 7 registered dental assistants, so they actually go to school and take a test to be licensed by the state of California for dental assisting. We have 2 regular dental assistants. We have 2 registered dental hygienists who volunteer with us about once a month. And then we have several front office staff who answer phones and coordinate care, get kids scheduled in the hospital, talk to parents about what's going on with their child, those types of things. So
it's a huge operation.
It is a huge operation.
About how many people do you see in a year?
We see over 5,500 children.
Wow.
And since opening in 2003, the dental center has seen over 15,000 children.
Oh my goodness.
And that zero, originally it was 0 to 12, and now it's 0 to 18.
Wow. And your specialty, Dr. Stout, is pediatric dentistry.
Correct.
And so pediatric dentistry is for up to the age of 18?
Yes, yeah. At the clinic, we, you know, around 12 or 13, our general dentist, Dr. Dunn, kind of takes over. In my private practice, I'll see them up until that age.
And what's the youngest age that you see children?
That's a great question, because I think a lot of people don't really understand that kids need to get in early. The early we can identify them as being at risk for caries, for cavities, the earlier we can start interventions that can prevent a lot of the disease that we sometimes see. So we recommend 12 months for first visit.
Oh, wow.
For a new parent. We can really tell a lot of that. If we are seeing or starting cavities, demineralizations, we can change the course of what's causing that. And like I said, prevent a lot of needless issues.
So even though those are baby teeth,
mm-hmm.
And those baby teeth are going to fall out, right?
Right.
It's not that you wait until the permanent teeth come in.
No, unfortunately, a lot of times, sometimes we can get away with that. If I have a baby tooth and a child that's 12 that's getting a cavity that's coming out in a year, a lot of times I can do something to stop it and not have to fill it. But when kids are getting cavities at a young age, the teeth are very important both for, obviously chewing, speech development, space. They hold space for permanent teeth, so the order and room that permanent teeth have to come in, you can prevent crowding by stopping decay. There's a lot of reasons we need those teeth. Also, the caries will pass between the age of 5 to 6 and 12. You have permanent and primary teeth sharing the mouth, so decay on primary can and will pass from baby tooth to permanent tooth. It just creates an unhealthy environment in the mouth for those new permanent teeth to come into. So, for a lot of reasons, we don't want to leave active decay, even if they are baby teeth.
Has it been a long time education of parents that children should have their teeth examined as early as 12 months? Because I was never told that as a parent. Now, granted, I was a parent quite a while ago, but I'm still a parent, but
I think it's been a big paradigm shift in the last 10 to 15 years.
Number one,
it was the recognition that most dental diseases are of bacterial origin. So they are caused by bacteria, and they are an infection of the tooth or the gums. And that once that was recognized, I think the dental health community really realized that if the infection became established in the baby teeth, meaning kids started getting cavities, and we recognize that kids are getting cavities earlier and earlier and earlier, that the idea of waiting until you go to school to get your first dental checkup was way too late, because the infection is already established. And that only promotes, as Dr. Stout just alluded to, mm-hmm. disease passing from the baby teeth to the permanent teeth, and the whole lifelong consequences, which we'll talk a little bit later about, because there are concerns with adults' oral health as well, but that they deal with the consequences of that early disease for the rest of their lives,
mm-hmm.
Because the infection's already established, and it's not something that there's a pill for or a shot for. You know, there's no miracle cure for dental decay.
So it's not like you can take an antibiotic and it goes away.
Correct.
Interesting. And that makes more sense, because it used to be children got their first pediatric evaluation. It was kind of insured when they were in early education.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's been an interesting time to be in the field, because there is a lot more well-understood science about how diseases of the mouth happen. The primary place kids get the germs for cavities are from their parent, and usually it's the mother. And it's almost always before they even have teeth. So cleaning the pacifier with your mouth if it drops on the ground. I know a lot of parents, when I say that, just shake their head and they put their hand over their eyes going, I'm guilty, I've done that. Or even, trying to taste the baby food to encourage the child to take the bite off the spoon. That will pass the infection on. So we all get exposed to it, and there are a lot of factors about why some people are more cavity prone than others. So there's a lot of things that go into Italian, I'm talking with my hands, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of things that go into why kids are more prone to getting cavities. And that the earlier they catch those bacteria, the more likely they are to have disease, and the worse it's probably going to be. And it's familial. So younger children with siblings that have cavities, and I'm sorry, Dr. Stout, if I'm stealing your thunder, will also get worse cavities, and they'll get them earlier. So there's a lot of consequences for having oral disease in the family.
So it seems like it used to be years ago that the idea was that children got cavities from their eating habits, from what they were eating and not eating, high sugars, juices. What happened to all that, of that?
That definitely contributes. It's kind of an overlap. It's an overlap of your risk, which mm-hmm. is a lot to do with pH. Some people have a higher, lower resting pH, which kind of predisposes you. The type and the type of bacteria you have, you can have a higher amount of acid producing bacteria. It's diet, it's hygiene, it's all those things put together. That's why it's so key to catch kids early that are at risk, because it just like any other disease, some kids can eat whatever they want and not brush their teeth and they don't get a cavity. It's just they have that type of bacteria where they have lower numbers of the virulent. Strep mutans is one of the main pathogens. They have lower numbers and they can get away with more. But that's why it's so key to catch the kids early that are at risk. We can see signs of acid attack on their teeth early and say, hey, your child has to be more careful with their diet. You have to brush your child 2 times a day and actually do it. So and just set up. Each patient is individual, so we determine their risk and then set up a program for them that's going to hopefully keep them out of trouble. And we have a lot more tools for prevention that I'm sure we'll get to now. There's some really exciting things that are actually aimed at reversing some early damage and helping with bacteria in the mouth. So
when the parent passes these infections along, are they passed along orally only?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. It's direct saliva contact with the child. So, however, I'm not saying don't kiss your baby. You need to kiss your baby. But don't clean off the pacifier. Don't share utensils. Don't share toothbrushes. You know, anything that's going to pass the intimate caregiver's spit onto the child's mouth is how that transmission occurs.
It's especially bad if they have active decay. If they have active decay, they have really high numbers of the bad bacteria. If you haven't had active decay in 2 or 3 years, your mouth is healthy. It's more difficult to pass those virulent bacteria. You have a lot lower percentage of them.
Do you, when you see a pediatric patient for the first time, are you screening and including a history from the parents in terms of oral history, whether they've had a lot of cavities?
Yeah, and that's kind of how what our understanding. There's something it's called CAMBRA, so we're caries management by risk assessment. So on each new patient, we kind of do just a verbal risk assessment, ask mom and get parental cavity history. Have they had active decay recently? What are their numbers? And that's one of our
indicators,
risk factors. Mm-hmm. So there are several others. Are they using a fluoridated paste? We recommend starting a baby on a fluoridated paste when they get teeth, just a tiny amount. It doesn't take a lot, and especially the nighttime before bed brushing, so they can leave a little bit of fluoride on their teeth while they sleep. That puts them in lower risk. Diet, you know, are they frequent snackers? Do they eat a lot of refined carbohydrates? So things we talked about. But, yeah, there's a list that we kind of go through and determine risk.
So when should they start oral care? You're saying right away?
As soon as, yeah. I say as soon as teeth are in the mouth, you can brush the gums just to get the baby used to you being in there. But as soon as you see teeth, I think before you see teeth, you can use like a little rubber.
They've actually chewies. Got those. Fingertips
are nice for teething, but when teeth are in, they don't really get down deep enough into the gum tissue. So as soon as you see teeth erupting, you should be on a bristle brush, like they have designed for a baby with a little softer head so they can chew on it. But
it's probably safer for your finger too.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of the times we'll encourage new parents, even though it's the last thing that they want to do, is to think about taking care of their kid's mouth. But you wouldn't put a baby to bed that was dirty. You know, you would want to give them a bath.
Yeah.
And so you would want to clean their mouth out. And as Dr. Stout said, the earlier you can introduce them to something in their mouth so that they're comfortable with it, mm-hmm. it becomes a routine for the entire family. You know, the parents are prepared that this is going to happen before we go to bed, and then the child comes to expect that. And there's a really good program out there called Brush Book Bed, and it's really a campaign to encourage parents to read to their children. But the fact that they included toothbrushing in with that is very positive, because it helps build those routines that really help children be more successful in early childhood, right? The more structured they are, the better the routines are established, the more likely the child's going to adopt that habit for a lifetime. So
let's talk about parental supervision with brushing too. I mean, you know, the classic is now go brush your teeth and come back. Let me smell your breath.
Let me feel the toothbrush.
Those
kids are pretty sneaky.
You know, I had one of those clever kids that, you know, ran the stuff on the toothbrush and squished it on her mouth and would come back. And
and I think this is close to Dr. Stout's heart, so I'll let you talk about the fact that, you know, when supervision should cease.
You know, for boys, I'd say 16. No, I'm just kidding.
And then there's a whole nother supervision.
Maybe. Yeah. I can say anything about my kid. I'm not going to throw my kids under the bus. Until the child has, I'd say as long as you can. Until the child has, you know, dexterity to tie their shoes, to write their name well, they're not going to have the dexterity to get in and really do a good job brushing their teeth. So I encourage at least twice a day. I think the child can, as soon as they're able to do the morning brushing, you know, but the nighttime's key. You want to get your teeth really clean before bed, because at night, you know, saliva shuts down. You're not speaking, not moving saliva around your mouth. And bacteria, if there are a lot of bacteria in the teeth, they can do a lot of damage. So nighttime, let the child brush. And then I like to lay them back or tilt their head back, because you can get a really good look. Those upper molars on the cheek side are a really hard spot for kids, because it's tight back there. Lower tongue side's always tough too, because the tongue fights. So I'd say, you know, until 6 or 7, you feel parents should be in there at the nighttime brushing and kind of just going around afterwards
and actually doing it.
Yeah, go let them have a shot and then go around and get those tough spots in the back.
Yeah. Parents feel better about getting the, you know, movable toothbrushes and all the fancy stuff, they should still be.
Yeah, I don't mind. They should be. And the spin brushes are fine. They do a good job. I really like an electric, either Sonicare. Sonicare makes a nice kids one, so I'll mention them. It's inexpensive, and it does do a really nice job. It's the technology is now that it actually has Bluetooth, so it communicates with an iPad or a phone, and it'll actually give them rewards. You can look at a history and see for how long they've brushed and how many times a day, and then they build rewards, and they have really fun little things in there that just get the kids on board with brushing for the ones that don't want to do it.
But
yeah,
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, but no, I think parents should be in there.
Okay. And one trick I would always tell my patients is don't wait necessarily until right before bed to brush the teeth, because at times in children's development, they already are fighting you for every bit of independence that they can get, right? They don't want to go to bed to begin with, and then you're adding this chore on top of it. So build into the routine what makes sense for you and your children. So if it's right after dinner, because they're still alert and they're not cranky because they're tired and they don't want to go to bed, or they're not missing their 15 minutes of TV, not that I'm encouraging screen time, but whatever it is, just, and it may have to adapt as the child ages, because they're going to be a different kid as they're maturing. And so make it reasonable and doable for your family to ensure your success. If you try to force it, it's going to be harder to be successful and feel successful. You don't want to have to sit on your kid to brush their teeth, although it does happen. But you don't want that to be the way that they get their teeth brushed.
And Dr. Stout, when you talked about making sure that you're brushing upper in the back and lower in the back, is that where you see the most frequent development of the cavities?
Depending on the age, you know, between younger kids, actually, the upper lip is important to lift the lip and get the gum lines, because when they're vertical, you don't really see that, and that's a spot for cavities. So I'd say between, you know, 12 months and three or four years, you see decay a lot on those upper fronts, especially if the teeth are touching. And then, but between, like four, when the molars start to touch, about three to 10, 12, you see back in between is the next most common, I would say. Okay.
Okay, great. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Central Coast Voices here on KCBX, your public radio station for the Central Coast. Today's show is addressing the
Children's Dental Health Month, actually.
We are talking about the necessity for engaging in children's dental health right from the beginning of their lives, at least absolutely by the first 12 months.
Correct. Right?
And my guests today are Dr. Theron Stout, who is board-certified pediatric dentist, who has a practice, Stout Pediatric Dentistry, in Atascadero, is it?
Yes, correct.
Yes. And also works with Tolosa Children's Dental Center. Tracy Anselmo is here, and she's the executive director for the Partnership for the Children of San Luis Obispo County. Tolosa Children's Dental Center is a part of that. And your voice can be a part of today's conversation, too. This show is live, and we're taking calls. We'd love to hear your comments and questions. You can join our discussion by calling 781-3875. It's a great time to ask questions of two people really knowledgeable about children's oral health care. And again, that's 781-3875. So once children do now have some kind of oral infection that's going to be affecting their oral care, what can you do about it?
That is a great question. I mean, we're kind of having some new options with that. I mean, it's you need to get the infection gone is number one. So you need to get those bacteria out of there.
So the brushing alone doesn't get the bacteria out of there. It keeps it from spreading, maybe?
It can help keep from spreading, keeping the plaque down. But, I mean, once there's a cavitated lesion, which is what a cavity carries is the disease, cavity is the result. It's a hole in the tooth, basically. Once there's a hole in the tooth, there's nothing really – well, there wasn't anything you could do to get that out. The brush can't reach in there. So especially with kids' teeth, they're a little less mineral – the dentin's less mineralized than permanent tooth dentin. The enamel's a lot thinner. So they kind of get stuff easier. And then with kids' diets, they have to eat all the time. They love carbohydrates. That's just what they need to grow. So it really fuels a cavity. So a cavity can go from pretty small to pretty large in like 6 months on a child, whereas an adult it would grow a little slower. So yeah, you have to get rid of that infection. Hopefully you catch it when it's small. You can do a lot. It's a lot simpler to remove. But it's just your standard, you know, get the soft decay out and put something over, fill it in so nothing comes back. I mean, it's just typically we're using composite these days for that. But if the cavity gets large enough and takes away enough tooth structure, you have to do a crown just like an adult would. It's a little bit different on a baby tooth. It's done at one time, but yeah, you have to get the
so you're actually doing this on a baby's teeth, not the permanent teeth.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah. So with a baby's tooth, typically we'll use it's a different type of crown. It's a lot easier to place. It's quick, but it's a lot less expensive, but it does the job. It gets the cavity out and restores all the tooth structure. And so as you can imagine, there are kids that need this that are under, you know, two, three years old. They can't do that sitting in a chair like you or I would. So that's where you need sedation of some type. Typically, if it's, you know, a lot of decay, it's a child going to sleep in the hospital setting.
Okay. And you do that?
Yes. Yeah. Tolosa offers that. Tracy, do you want to?
I want to pipe up because I think Dr. Stout is kind of being humble here. Part of the reason that we talk about pediatric dentists being really the place for these things to happen is because they're dealing with these little kids that don't really have very long attention spans. They are possibly anxious about coming into a strange environment, people that they don't recognize, sounds that they haven't heard before, smells that they're not familiar with. And pediatric dentists go to school for 2 extra years to learn how to manage a child's behavior and understand how diseases happen in kids' mouths, which, while they're not different necessarily fundamentally, what he just described about the tooth being thinner and the you know, the disease progressing more quickly, they learn all of that. But mostly they learn how to manage kids so that they can have a positive dental experience. And this is, I wanted to bridge to this from your comments early on. The more positive you can make a child's initial visit to the dentist, the funner that they, you know, they feel that it's going to be, the less likely they're going to be an anxious dental patient as they get older,
right,
and avoid those cares. If all they have is positive experiences because they've had a pediatric dentist that managed whatever was going on, whether it was a serious case and they needed to go under general anesthesia, or whether they put on some of the new medicaments that we have out there that stop cavities from getting worse so that that child can naturally lose that tooth without having to go into for, you know, a filling or a crown. All of those positive experiences really build good dental patients.
Yeah, I think that's really important because I don't think, certainly not, you know, in my childhood, did I ever have a pediatric dentist? I don't think there were any around. It was adult dentists who treated children like small adults. They didn't treat adults very well either.
And kids are not small adults. I think
they all recognize
that. They wiggle a little bit
more.
I may have acted like a child
as an adult.
They have smaller mouths. You know, their disease patterns are different.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's really, really important. I don't even remember what your original question was, but I think it's really, really important to understand that pediatric specialists fill a niche within
dental health. It's
because, and that is part of why Tolosa Children's Dental Center purposely employs pediatric dentists. It's a different model for a public clinic because a lot of the times they hire a nonprofit clinic will hire a general dentist. They're less expensive. They may have a little bit of affinity for children's dental care, but they haven't necessarily been trained on all of these management techniques from distraction. And distraction can be funny stories or playing a character, asking them what superhero they were today, or, you know, to video monitors on the ceiling, to nitrous oxide, laughing gas, and some of these other sedation techniques that they use that allow them to treat a child as comfortably and as little anxiety producing as possible.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. No, I think she spoke very well.
It's key. It's funny because I picked up on that too when you said you were a huge fan. I'm like, that's my goal. We want to make huge fans, and you know, it works, you know, and it's a huge thing that Tolosa does too, because it's very tough to see kids with DentaCal. The reimbursement rates are ridiculously low. I mean, probably my overhead in my private office is probably about 70%, and Tolosa, DentaCal reimburses it probably 30% or 25% of my private fees. It just can't be done. I mean, you take one or two kids, but it's a big thing to have a fully functioning children's dental clinic to take care of these kids, because they wouldn't really have anywhere else to go.
Would have nothing.
Absolutely.
Outside of brushing, what you described, are there other ways that parents can prevent cavities?
Yeah, diet's very, very important.
So what to avoid?
Just the processed carbohydrates, watch the sweetened drinks. Soda's really bad, that most people know, but sometimes you just forget.
What about juices? Are they as bad or?
Close. Not quite as bad, but they're close. They have a lot of, and especially the citrus, like they have a low pH with, you gotta watch, pH is important, and sugar, the amount of sugar. So you just look at the label and see how much fructose.
So the higher citrus drinks.
They're low pH, so it's. I'm not saying don't drink juice, but when you have juice, maybe have it with the meal, because you're already going to be having other things. You have to watch out with kid snack time, because they love to snack. So you know, keep the things with high sugar. If you have to have it, like if you're having dessert, to have it right after dinner. Don't wait an hour and then it's the way that. Tracy's ready. She's go for it, Tracy. Every time after you get a carbohydrate, the pH of your mouth drops into an area where minerals can come out of your teeth, and then your body naturally buffers and it brings it back up, but it takes time. So if you're constantly having things with processed carbohydrates.
Potato chips.
Chips, yeah.
French fries.
Yep.
hamburgers.
I was going to say it's two things. So first of all, it's a good testament for why you should eat dessert first. You really want to know.
And what did you have for breakfast?
I know, right? Don't, hey, shush. That's You're right. not supposed to say that.
Don't be a hater.
Okay, okay.
And then I would often say to parents, if it's sticky, it's icky. If it's going to stick to the teeth, and think about things that we might usually think are healthy for our teeth that may stick to our teeth. And so fruit rolls, mm-hmm. they're concentrated sugar. They're dehydrated. They stick in the teeth. You know, they're not, they may feel healthy because they're a fruit.
Fruit, right.
But really the fact, and the same thing with fruit juice, it's got, it does have sugar. The bacteria don't know the difference between fructose sugar and artificial, you know, other sugars, processed sugars. So you have to be cautious. And one note that I'd like to make is a lot of it is about how they eat. And Dr. Stout just alluded to this. Kids eat more frequently. They're eating every 2 to 4 hours.
Yeah.
So you have to be careful about what it is that you're eating in those in-between meal times or what it is you're drinking in between meals. We really recommend outside of meal times, and meal times you can have juice, you can have milk, but outside of that it should be water.
And as the beverage.
As the beverage. Yeah. It's for hydration, it's for, you know, all of those things. It's good for your body, it's good for your teeth.
It's cleaning your mouth
out. It's cleaning your mouth out. You know, kids don't need sports drinks for, unless they're a serious athlete, there's really no reason for them to be drinking a sports drink. It's just loaded with all sorts of sugars and chemicals.
I watch a lot of parents who put together the snacks that they're going to take with their children. So you've got the little thing of Cheerios, right?
Or goldfish.
And then you've got, the goldfish. And you've got a little thing of the fruit roll-ups or the little fruity things that
fruit
are
snacks,
the little fruit snacks.
Yeah.
Then you've got juice boxes, you know, and the kid will consume 1, 2, 3 juice boxes during that shopping trip. And so as you're talking about it, I'm thinking that's probably not a healthy thing to be providing, even though we think maybe it is. Better alternatives would be what? You said water.
Any kind of whole fruit. So
fresh
apples,
fruit.
Fresh fruit, things that are kind of that have fiber in them.
Okay.
Celery. Apples, because in a way you could think of them as scrubbers for the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
They clear out of the mouth pretty quickly.
You mentioned things that stick. So the first thing that came to my mind is peanut butter. Good, bad.
If it's non-sugar, it is great.
Okay.
If there's sugar in it.
So like celery with peanut butter.
If there's sugar in it, it's kind of neutral, I'd say. Nuts are actually really good. They have some natural antibacterial, and they don't have any carbohydrates. So nuts are great. String cheese, really good. It kind of cleans.
Cheese is really good.
Cheeses are good. So
there's actually an enzyme in cheeses that
helps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, casein.
Okay, that's good to know.
Right. And another example of a sticky, icky food.
Yeah.
You'd think raisins. Oh, great. Raisins are grapes, but they're dried and then they stick.
And they're really sugary.
And they can be. I mean, it's concentrated sugar. When you dehydrate something, you're really taking the water out of it.
So you're right. Little boxes of raisins are
the
other thing.
I eat those all the time for lunch.
Oh,
that's
my God.
I was a
horrible parent.
So peanut butter and celery is good. Ants on a log, bad.
Ants on a log, bad. Peanut butter and celery,
ants on a log, leave the ants on
leave
the log.
Leave the ants off.
Leave the ants off.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I've really failed as a parent.
No,
I'm surprised
my
child has any teeth in her head whatsoever. So do cavities come? Are there people that have weak teeth? You know, they have weaker enamel, weak teeth.
I mean, people say that a lot, but and there's some truth to it. I mean, there are things with tooth structure. Sometimes enamel won't come together well. You can have less mineralized enamel that kind of breaks down faster than healthy enamel would. I guess in a sense, there are some teeth that are more prone to things.
I talked about in the beginning a little bit of the multilayer, and it's kind of a balancing act. So there's three things that it takes to get a cavity. It takes the germs. So the bacteria that we've been talking about and specific kinds of bacteria for cavities, specific kinds of bacteria for gum disease. It takes some kind of a food source for those bacteria to thrive on. And then it takes the tooth structure. So you're not going to get cavities, obviously, if you don't have all three of those. And what we try to encourage parents to do is keep the two things that they have control of, nutrition, so food, and the bacteria, in check so that they're balancing out. If you have a lower pH, right, that's when they're going to get cavities. And foods cause that and bacteria cause that. So if you're eating nutritious foods and keeping that pH up and you're removing the bacteria by brushing and you're strengthening the teeth by using fluoridated toothpaste, then you're going to even out that teeter-totter of risk for getting cavities. Now, you can do all of that stuff and still have problems. You might get really nasty bacteria that just don't go away, and you might have an enamel problem that's genetic or caused by an illness or maybe some medication that your child took or you took while you were pregnant. There are a lot of things that can play into that factor, but it's all about trying to equalize it so that it's flat instead of tilted towards, I'm going to get cavities because I have 150 of the bad things and only two of the good things.
Balance. It is important to identify yourself as being at risk, because if you know you're at risk, you know, then you know you should be, you will be doing these things. And that's what that early visit is for. I forgot to mention earlier, a lot of parents, I think, feel like, I hear in my office, oh, I don't want to bring them in that young. They're going to cry and scream.
It's going to be traumatic, not even
for their child. They're worried about us. Like, oh, it's going to scare your other patients or your
staff.
It would
scare me.
So just know, as pediatric dentists, we expect it. I mean, we know that's going to happen. Yeah. I mean, before three, they're not going to love a stranger looking in their mouth. But they actually, if you get them in early, they do get kind of used to it. And it's nice because they'll know you if an emergency comes up and they bump a tooth and they have to come see. It's not their first time. They've been to the building before. They've seen the people before, so
right,
you know. But anyway, that early determination of risk, I think, is key to how we treat the disease. Now we know it's a disease, and we aim our energy at the ones that are at risk.
Well, so I think it's a great place to be too. That, you know, I think it lessens parents feeling guilty about caries only being the result of lousy parenting,
right?
You know, I mean, it really does come with an infection, something that is preventable, but something that is a disease model rather than just bad behavior on the parent's part, even though we contribute to it. I'm still questioning my parenting skills.
One thing, if you know you're somebody that gets cavities, like, and I was talking about the importance of the nighttime routine, and we were talking about, getting that brushing in
right.
at some point when everybody's tired. If you're a person that's prone to cavities, make sure you do like something before bed that's going to leave some mineral around your teeth. So like an anti-cavity rinse for kids once they're old enough to do that. If they're not old enough to do a rinse and they're swallowing, just when you do your nighttime brushing, put just a tiny smear of paste on for the young child. Brush it on. You can encourage them to spit, but they'll probably swallow. But don't try not to eat or drink after that. If you're giving them water before bed, do it before the brushing, if you can, because that leaving that little tiny bit of fluoride on while you sleep has been shown to really keep demineralization, keep damage down, and repair some damage.
Should they be adding fluoride and putting fluoride in the baby's mouth from the time that they're babies, or is there an age at which to introduce
fluoride? I like it in just the toothpaste. That's my recommendation.
Especially
if you're one at risk. If the parents have never had a cavity,
right.
And the baby, you know, is not showing any signs, then you can get away with using the training non-fluoridated paste for longer. But if you're a parent that's had decay in your past and you know that already puts a child at risk, I think it's worth the just a tiny smear. We used to say a pea size because that's a quarter milligram. That's what we would prescribe when we were prescribing for everybody. Now we know it doesn't take. I mean, I know it doesn't
grain
take
of
that
rice.
A yeah,
grain of rice.
A grain of rice. That's a good measure. So it doesn't take that whole pea size. Grain of rice. Put it on there. Wipe it out with a little dry gauze if you're worried about them ingesting.
Yeah.
But don't use water. Don't rinse, and let it just sit there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You're listening to KCBX, your public radio station, at 90.1 FM San Luis Obispo, 91.7 FM Salinas de Paso Robles, 89.5 FM Santa Barbara, and streaming at kcbx.org. February is Children's Dental Health Month, and we're taking this opportunity to bring you a discussion about pediatric dental care, some resources and activities that are also happening. My guests for the show are Dr. Theron Stout, board-certified pediatric dentist, who owns with Stout Pediatric Dentistry in Atascadero, and also with the Tolosa Children's Dental Center. Also here is Tracy Anselmo, who's the executive director for the Partnership for Children of San Luis Obispo County and Tolosa Children's Dental Center. Today's show is live, and you can bring your comments and questions to our discussion on air by calling 805-781-3875. And we're going to take a call from Jason. Jason, are you there?
I am.
Hi. You have
Hi.
A comment or question?
Yeah, I do. So I'm with First Five, Slo County, and we are a proud and big supporter of Children's Dental Health and
Yay.
Also specifically of Tolosa Children's Dental Center. And I wanted to say, you know, we're lucky to have people like Tracy and Dr. Stout out there, you know, doing this really great work. There's also tons of other dentists in the community that kind of fly under the radar that aren't on radio and are also doing great work. Specifically, I wanted to ask Tracy if she could speak to a little bit about these underserved populations that First Five is trying to reach and maybe the extent of the problems, because I think that there are a lot of folks that I know that work in public health who are even surprised at the extent of the problem in our county. So I'll take that comment.
I didn't plant you out there, did I, Jason?
You did not. You did not. You guys sound great. Thanks for your great work.
Thank you, Jason.
Yeah, First Five, as many might know or maybe not, really focuses on the first 5 years of life. They are working in several areas to prepare children to succeed as they go into school. And a lot, while they serve every child or are able to potentially serve every child in the county, the real focus is on those children that may not have as many opportunities. So we're looking at kids that are of low income, potentially, that may be in a system such as social services or on Medi-Cal, and really working towards getting those kids every chance that they have to succeed. And so what that means for us is those kids are generally at the highest risk for dental disease. Mm-hmm. You know, they are 3 to 5 times more likely to have a cavity and a baby tooth because of whatever circumstances are, whether their parents had it, whether their sibling had it, whether they weren't being brushed when they were brought home from the hospital and as they got that first tooth. There are a number of reasons. And so our emphasis is really on those children that have the greatest burden of the disease in the county.
Mm-hmm.
The folks that treat those kids at Tolosa Children's Dental Center, at times we'll see a child, children have 20 teeth, by the way, when they are when they have their primary teeth, 16 of those 20 teeth have a cavity in them, and a number of them have to be extracted. Those are the kinds of cases that we see. And so this is a significant problem still in this county, even after a number of years of efforts by folks within this community to address the unmet needs for children. We were created for the purpose of helping kids that didn't have a chance to get dental care. That is why we exist. And it's kind of a hidden thing in this county.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't experienced dental disease yourself or you've never had a toothache, you may not realize that there are kids sitting in this county today that have a hole in their tooth that's causing them pain, keeping them from concentrating in school, not being able to sleep, not being able to eat. And that has an impact across their entire daily activity. They may not want to communicate with people. They may be lethargic because they can't eat what they need to eat to be able to participate in their daily activities. They may act out in school. There are just a number of consequences from all of this. And so I hope that kind of explained a little bit about what we're trying
mm-hmm.
to do and
mm-hmm.
who we're trying to see. And thank you, Jason, for your question.
And the need. I mean, it's significant. I mean, that's right.
It is tremendously significant. There are 25,000 children on DentiCal in this county, and we see 5,500 a year.
So where are the rest of the kids getting? Are they able to find the services?
About
are there enough 40, providers?
There are not enough providers. About 41-42% of those 25,000 children access a dentist in a year in this county. And the community health centers of the Central Coast see the kids.
Uh-huh.
There is a private practitioner down in the South County. don't know that I should say his name. But there are only three, really. It's right. us, Community Health Centers of the Central Coast, and the private practitioner. There are dentists that see individuals, but as Jason said, they do it under the radar. Mm-hmm. They give back out of their own kindness, in their own practice, to kids. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we'll talk about when we're talking about the activities that are going on with Children's Dental Health Month are the dental screenings that the Dental Society does every year. They go to every elementary school in San Luis Obispo County and do free dental screenings on the kids. And they identify those kids that are uninsured and have toothaches or pain that they can't get into care. Mm-hmm. And then local dentists provide a day or a half a day of care. We at Telosa provide a year of care, and we take those kids on permanently as a dental home. But they'll address those needs that brought them to the attention of that dentist or dental hygienist doing that screening. So that event is called Give Kids a Smile, and it's occurring in February because it's Children's Dental Health Month.
And that's the screening that's going to be
the screening
place.
And the treatment.
And the treatment. Mm-hmm.
The Dental Society and the school nurses, they've been doing it since I've gotten here and well before I got here. It's really a cool service. So go out to the elementary schools, and the numbers have definitely come down, I think, because of Telosa. When I got here, I think we used to see 5-6% emergencies with kids. It's probably down to about 2-3%. And it's kind of exciting to see.
How are the children identified in the schools? Is it all the children in the schools are screened?
Depends on the school or the district. I think Atascadero does all. They have less numbers. The schools with more numbers will do like K-3 and 5 or something. So just depends on the district. But, yeah, I think most kindergartners get checked.
Okay.
And it's just a flashlight exam.
Right.
So we just use a tongue blade and flashlight. It's really well organized. The school nurses and the schools are awesome. They get all the kids through really quickly. And just it's really to pick up the kids that parents may not know that anything's going on.
Sure.
And we're saying, hey, there's something going on.
There's a problem
That some of the kids haven't been seen. So
Once kids are identified through a screening, how soon can they get in for treatment?
For the Give Kids a Smile, because it occurs in the month of February during the screenings, they really focus. The nurses work with the Dental Society and the providers, the private practitioners who are willing to take those kids to get them in on that Give Kids
they
a Smile day.
Make a commitment.
Exactly. Yeah. And so they treat as many kids as they can, and they try to triage. So it's the most urgent need that gets addressed, understanding and talking to the family that there might be other things that need to be done,
sure.
but we're going to address this most urgent problem right now.
Right.
And really, they schedule the screenings, and the Dental Society and the Oral Health Program with the County of San Luis Obispo have done a very nice job building this network up so that the screenings occur and then the Give Kids a Smile days happen fairly quickly after that so that they can feed those children into those slots that they have available for those treatments. And, as we alluded to, Telosa Children's Dental Center, school nurses call us at any time they have a child with a toothache, and we get them in, especially if it's an emergency. We try to get them in within a day or so.
And do parents generally know that DentCal may be available for their children, or is that still an education that needs to occur?
That is a really good question. It is still an education. I mean, there's confusion that there's two names. So
DentCal
they might,
and Medi-Cal.
Correct.
And they don't necessarily have both on
No, they always have both.
They always
if
have
you
both.
Have Medi-Cal, you have DentCal.
Okay.
But they don't know that. You're right. And so there is a point of education about that. There have been ebbs and flows of availability of providers within this county. And so depending on when it is, a family may have tried to get into a dentist that accepts that insurance. And remember, there are only three right now that accept it. They may have to wait a little while.
Two in addition to Telosa.
Okay. And so, there is a big education campaign. Some folks don't know they're eligible for DentiCal and Medi-Cal. There are a number of rules that have changed about that. So,
okay. Well, let's take a call here from Yolanda. Are you there, Yolanda?
Yes, I am.
You have a question or comment?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I'm thinking that in my case, even after brushing with an electric brush, flossing still brings out lots more in the way of food particles. Shouldn't children be doing that too?
Great question. Yeah, flossing's a very important part of hygiene. And for those kids that don't have the dexterity, it's nice that the little floss picks have come around now, so those are helpful for parents and kids to get in there. But yeah, as soon as any tooth touches, the parent should be in there flossing. And some kids have great space; they don't need to floss as early. But as soon as you see a tooth come together, usually you'll tell from the front teeth either they're touching when they come in or not. The lower molars will typically come in with a little space, and they begin to touch around three and a half. So you should be in there at that age with the kids as soon as those teeth touch and be using floss. Great point.
Okay.
Thank you, Yolanda.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good question. So you wanted to cover some points, definitely.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk a little bit more about what's going on with Children's Dental Health Month in the county. So Children's Dental Health Observances, it's an American Dental Association activity, and it actually began in 1941 as a one-day observance, Children's Dental Health Day. And in 1981, it extended to a whole month-long activity. And the American Dental Association often has a theme, and they promote certain activities. This year, it's drinking fluoridated water. But in the county of San Luis Obispo, we've been very active, at least for the last 6 years, if not more, in getting the Board of Supervisors to proclaim February as Children's Dental Health Month. So Tuesday was the proclamation. But we also build a lot of awareness and activities around Children's Dental Health Month. There is a countywide coalition, the Children's Oral Health Coalition, that meets. And if you would like more information, I suggest you contact the County Department of Public Health. We also do the school screenings, and that's supported by the Central Coast Dental Society and the Give Kids a Smile events. This year, Tolosa is helping with a smile drive, and what we're actually doing is businesses that are youth-oriented, so Boys and Girls Clubs, Patterson and Tedford Pediatrics, a number of companies around the county are collection sites for children's oral health supplies, and what we hope to do with those is distribute them to those other child-serving organizations that for low-income kids that don't necessarily have access to toothbrushes and toothpaste. Remember, germs are passed, so you don't want to share a toothbrush. So a child should have their own toothbrush. Children should brush with kids-flavored toothpaste because there's a concern with, you know, the taste is too strong and then they won't like to brush. Right, yes, they say it's hot. Mm-hmm. We're also...
So you're asking for donations.
We are.
And children's
oral hygiene supplies. Yes. Yeah. Verdon Marketing, Boys and Girls Club of South San Luis Obispo County, Patterson and Tedford Pediatrics. I'm going through my head in order. Paso Robles Children's Museum, the Paso Robles Youth Arts Foundation, and Tolosa Children's Dental Center.
And those are collection
donation sites?
Yes,
okay. Exactly. We also have a museum exhibit at the Paso Robles Children's Museum. You can go to Tolosa Children's Dental Center at the Paso Robles Children's Museum, and they have x-rays and tooth models and a receptionist desk and charts that the kids can write in. Their art activity this month is all around oral health. They have their reading day is also dental related, so they'll have a book that they'll read that's children's dental health related. And so that, you know, that's really exciting. And then a number of the first five organizations that do school readiness are doing their literacy hours around oral health. So they will read an oral health book, they will have an oral health activity, they will talk about oral health, and that's for the parents and the children that attend those. So there's just a ton going on, and I am going to take a shameless plug at our fundraiser that's coming up at the end of the month, which is called Sip for Smiles. And we are actually partnering with Paso Robles Youth Arts Foundation. And you may think, what does Paso Robles Youth Arts and Tolosa Children's Dental Center have in common? And it really is the kids. We serve the same population. And so we are fortunate to have them as a partner. They are hosting the event at 3201 Spring Street on February 25th. And they will be hanging art in their gallery. And it will be a gallery showing from students from Paso Robles Youth Arts that will be dentally themed. It's What Makes You Smile. And the tickets are available on TolosaChildrensDental.org or by calling 464-3254. They're $35 each, and for Saturday, February 25th from 5:30 to 8.
Great. And we got about 3 minutes, so I wanted to have you wrap up, too, with some of the important points that you want parents to hear about children's oral health. Kind of hit the hot.
Okay, so yeah, just like we said, I'd say get the young ones in early, especially if it's your first child. siblings will usually just informally take a look at the baby with their older sibling, and that's all we need. But yeah, first child, get them in early to the dentist. I think the pediatricians do an awesome job. They screen, they'll look at teeth and screen for dental disease, but get them that dental home where we can get a really good look and start some prevention if we need it. Brush your kids' teeth. You need
help
to do it.
Them
help
brush
them.
It.
Help them that nighttime one especially. Mm-hmm. Try to do something that leaves a little fluoride on their teeth while they sleep. And diet's important. Watch what your kids eat and drink, especially if you're at risk for cavities. One thing I thought, there's alkaline water now, so you can get not only water, but water that has higher pH. Some of the bottled water actually has lower pH, lower than 7, so they drop the pH to preserve it. So there's some of them around pH 5, which can actually take calcium away from your teeth even with water. So, but anyway.
Tap water is always the best.
Tap water is neutral. Yep. Yeah. Filtered tap water is neutral pH and has some mineral content, which is good.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's.
And about going to the dentist, the earlier the better for getting kids familiar.
Yeah,
for
identifying kids at risk, really, and getting them familiar. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, I often, when I was in practice, encouraged parents to bring their new kids in, their babies, even their young toddlers if they themselves hadn't been to the dentist, and sit in the parent's lap. Now, you mm-hmm. do have to ask your provider if that's okay, but get them familiar
used
with
to
the
it.
Environment and see, particularly if you're not an anxious dental patient yourself. Kids mm-hmm. pick up on that anxiety, that tension, So try to be relaxed and just let them see. And, you know, one of the other things that we try to do are make the terms understandable for kids. So tickling their teeth and putting vitamins on their teeth and being able to count their teeth and letting them watch and learn and see that it's okay when you have that done will make them more comfortable for when they need to have that done.
There's always a question about whether pacifiers are bad for teeth.
That's a good one. I'm okay with pacifiers. You just can't. You get into trouble when you continue them too long. Different people say different things about how long, but I'd say as soon as you can get them off 12 months, 18 months. Because, yeah, they will. Even if they say they're orthodontic pacifiers, they will change the shape of the bite. So they create an open bite in front. They can create narrowness in the back. Usually it's reversible, but there is a point where the bite gets narrow enough, they have to shift into what's called a cross bite, and that'll stick around. So hard to tell when that's going to happen, but usually if you get off by like 18 months, you're safe.
Okay.
You have to be careful if it turns into a finger habit, though. I'd rather have a pacifier than a thumb or a finger. So
okay.
if you lose a pacifier and they start going for a thumb or a finger,
go back to the pacifier
until you can try it again.
Okay.
Yeah. Good question.
Okay. And I want to thank you for being here today.
My pleasure. Good information.
I want to, again, your event is called Sip
for Smiles,
February 25th. And the date?
February 25th.
Okay. And the phone number to call?
464-3254.
Okay. And I want to thank Dr. Theron Stout, who's board-certified pediatric dentist, who works with Tolosa Children Dental Center, and Tracy Anselmo, Executive Director, Partnership for Children of San Luis Obispo County and Tolosa Children's Dental Center. Next week, please join Fred Monroe. He will be hosting his guests. And we appreciate any suggestions you can submit for future show topics. If you have a topic you'd like to suggest, send it to voices@kcbx.org. Central Coast continues and is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm Chris Kington Barker. Thank you for joining me on Central Coast Voices.